Part of the sermon preparation procedure that I teach the students is they must derive the point of the text, which we call the exegetical point. But real preaching is not simply regurgitating exegesis. I think too often this is the case, and then application is tied on at the end. But real preaching means application, and this means application throughout the sermon. And so to have a valid sermon point, you must tie the exegetical point of the text to some application and apply the point of the text, the teaching of Scripture, to the congregation. And so the sermon point combines the exegetical point and the application that arises from the text and you think is appropriate for the congregation. And with those two things tied together, then individuals can go out from the worship service with a very specific application and work on that during the week. The basic sermon preparation procedure goes like this. First, you need to select your text. And we talk about the need of selecting a text that involves a complete thought. Because if your sermon point is going to be a complete thought, then the text that you start with also needs to be a complete thought. And we after the intro to preaching, we do talk about preaching it, from the different genres. So this would involve larger chunks of Scripture. And you have to derive, then, the point of the passage of Scripture, and this must be in a complete sentence, and we go through the procedure for doing this. Then, in order to properly preach, the homiletical point or the sermon point must include an application. Preaching involves application, not just relating information. And so you must tie a specific application to the point of your text to form the sermon point. Once you have the sermon point, then you can begin to lay out an outline. But you really have to have that sermon point first, because the sermon point gives you unity, focus, and purpose. And you just know your purpose only from having a good sermon point. And I teach then how to put together a linear, sequential outline that is suitable for oral presentations. And this is one of the emphases in class and in the book, that you need to form your sermon not as a written document, but as something that is suitable for the ear, not just the eye, but people listen, they don't read the sermon. So it must be suitable for hearing. And then, of course, we put the conclusion and the introduction on this sermon outline. But I should take a step back, because we need to add details to the sermon outline. And the details include the explanation of the text, a little bit of illustration, some application, and a transition in each piece of the outline. An outline like this is built for oral consumption, and then after the outline is pretty well put together, then you can put together a conclusion, and the last thing you want to do is put together an introduction. So that's basically the sermon preparation procedure. Not everyone buys into the sermon preparation procedure, but I think if they do, it will be helpful. One of my students this year was reluctant and a little resistant. And he said to me toward the end of the class, I think you're right. I agree with you. And he bought the draft copy of my book and gave it to his pastor. So thank you. One of the objections to the whole idea of a one-point sermon, or a sermon having one main point, is that we don't see this in the Bible, that the Sermon on the Mount, for example, the sermons of Paul in the book of Acts, Stephen's defense, Peter's sermons, appear not to have one main point. And the objection is that these sermons obviously, I've heard it put this way, obviously don't have one main point. Well, upon examination, I think the truth of the matter is that these sermons, in fact, do have one main point. For example, in Acts chapter 7, in Stephen's defense, which is really a sermon before the Sanhedrin, Stephen is defending himself on actually one main point. He's being accused of blasphemy. He's being accused of the fact that he doesn't follow Moses, and he discards the ceremonies of the temple because he follows Jesus. And basically what Stephen says in response to the Jewish Sanhedrin is, no, I'm not the one that's ignoring Moses or not following Moses and refusing to understand the ceremonies of the temple. You are. To put it positively, Stephen is saying to the Sanhedrin, if you follow Moses and if you understand the ceremonies of the temple, you come to Christ. That's Stephen's point. And as you examine the sermon, you realize that this really is Stephen's point. And at the end of the sermon, which turns out to be an inductive because he is dealing with a rather hostile audience, he makes this quite clear that they're not the ones that have followed the law of Moses, but actually they're the ones who have repudiated the law of Moses, and he's not guilty of the accusations that have been made against him. After I got into writing, I decided that maybe it'd be a good idea to investigate the origin of the three-point sermon. So I did a little bit of study on this, and I discovered a couple of things. One is that the three-point sermon really comes out of medieval scholasticism. And Thomas Aquinas, for example, was the premier schoolman. And the whole idea of the schoolman or scholasticism in their studies was using a dialectic. And in other words, they had a theme they were interested in. They wanted to see the counter to that theme and then would synthesize that, the whole idea of a dialectic. And the idea of the three-point sermon arose from the use of this dialectic in the classroom. And so the three-point sermon really finds its origin in scholasticism, which I think is pretty interesting. And further, what happens is that when the reformers come along, they jump over the medieval approach to preaching and go back to the church fathers. They go back to Augustine and Chrysostom. And the sequential exposition of passages of Scripture. And you don't find in Calvin definitive points, divisions, as some pastors in homiletics books would have it. You don't find that in Calvin. You don't find that in Augustine. You don't find that in Chrysostom. You find the regular and systematic sequential exposition of Scripture. And one of the criticisms that has arisen as far as my sermon preparation procedure is concerned is, well, there aren't clear divisions. And my answer is, well, look at Calvin. There aren't clear divisions in Calvin. And what you find in Calvin is Calvin has an idea that emerges from the text, and he pursues that idea in the exposition of the text in each sermon. And when you read Calvin's sermons, this becomes pretty clear that this is the case. So really, I found it pretty interesting that this was the origin of the three-point sermon. And in preaching today, what's happened is we have this struggle between scholasticism and the reformers, and this tension that has arisen. Broadus talks about this, for example. And that tension is still with us because the three-point sermon is very prominent. Again, if there's a desire to be biblical, you see, I would challenge individuals. Look at the teachings of Christ. Look at the sermons of Paul. Look at the sermons of Peter. Look at Stephen's defense. You don't see those clear divisions. You don't see a three-point sermon in the Bible. You see the exposition of the Old Testament in the Bible. And I think the sermon preparation that procedure that I've put together and teaching really is more biblical from this perspective. Being able to discern the outline in the minds of some is quite important. And my philosophy is, no, you don't need to necessarily be able to discern the outline. Every good sermon ought to have a sequence which is felt by the congregation. They get the movement in the sermon. That's what's actually important. And the homiletics professors actually agree with that idea that movement in a sermon is quite important. In a three-point sermon, for example, there's very little movement. It's static. The three-point outline is really static. But at any rate, the whole idea is that people sense the movement and they are brought to and led to the one main point of the sermon. And then they can say, I've got it. I understand. This is what the text teaches. And when that's accomplished, you've accomplished your purpose. It's very interesting that pastors, for example, will put in their bulletins, outlines, and often they'll put in their bulletins outlines that have blanks in them. And they'll want people to fill in the blanks. They think that this is a way of helping people understand the text and understand the sermon. But often what happens, you look around the congregation when you use this sort of outline. Often what happens is that someone will miss the word that's supposed to go in the blank, and they'll go, what did he say? What was the word? And now contact has been broken between the pastor and the congregation. And this inhibits communication. It doesn't help communication. What people need to go away with is the one main point. They need to have the residual message of your sermon. And when they have that residual message, and that residual message matches the point that you want to make, you've accomplished your purpose.